Wolves Cast, audio on demand.
Welcome into another episode of Wolves Cast Audio on Demand. John Folkey alongside Cal Soderquist here on the Timberwolves Radio Network. Coming up on this episode, we'll go one-on-one with Jeff Teague as he tries to keep his streak of playoff appearances alive. Teague has never missed the postseason in his entire NBA career. That includes stops in Atlanta, in Indy, and he's trying to continue that here with Minnesota. Plus, we'll go three in the key, the top three storylines this week in the NBA. And Cal, we'll start kicking this thing off with, you know, Minnesota right now coming off that loss to Utah. Wild weekend for the Wolves. They went from 7th up to 5th, back to 7th in the standings. And as we look at it today, one game out of 4th place, which would mean home court advantage in the first round, and one game out of being out of the playoffs. So we've talked about it all season long. This race right now is incredibly tight. Minnesota controls their destiny with the tiebreakers they have, but they've got four very important games coming up. Two games left against the Denver Nuggets, who are 9th, and a game back of the Wolves, and a game against the LA Clippers, and a game against, the LA Lakers, and a game against the Memphis Grizzlies. And so there is so much happening right now, not only for the Wolves and what they've got coming up, but also in terms of you're trying to watch these other teams and make sure that, you know, as you're winning, they're not gaining too much ground. So, I mean, people ask, where do you think the Wolves are going to end up? I say, I have no idea right now.
It's wild, and I think it perfectly encapsulates when you said one game from being outside looking in and then one game from a potential home court advantage in a first round with that four seed. So it's perfect in terms of how bunched up everything is. That summarizes it excellently, and really anything could still happen, and that's why I think it's just kind of important for Minnesota to focus on themselves and focus on correcting some of the issues that have popped up in these recent games and just kind of taking that approach, because you could probably drive yourself nuts trying to follow all these different results and run the math on some of these tiebreakers and how to break what it comes down to, division record, conference record, whatever. I think you would lose a lot of energy trying to figure all that out. So Minnesota just really, especially being shorthanded right now, and we're not sure if some reinforcements are on the way, but really just focus on what you can control and let those chips fall where they might once you finish these final four games.
Kind of interesting to look at this final week of the season and give some kudos to the schedule makers, right? At the beginning of the season, you take a look at the schedule and you say, all right, this is a stretch where we're going to be super busy, not going to be a whole lot of practice time. This is a stretch where you're going to have more practice time. You're going to be able to, you know, get a couple breaks in between games, but you don't necessarily look at the opponents and say, well, this is going to be an important stretch because, you know, we're going to be battling with this team for playoff positioning. And yet, coming into the final week of the season, these two matchups with Denver loom very, very large. And, you know, at the beginning of the season, the schedule makers, they can't guess on these types of things. But I will and want to give them credit, because it's not just Minnesota facing off with Denver. It's these teams basically from 4 through 10 are all playing each other. San Antonio, Oklahoma City, New Orleans, Utah, the Clippers, the Wolves, the Nuggets. I mean, all these teams have faced off against each other, and so it's leading to drama of the highest order because nothing settled outside the top three, and all we know about those three is that Houston's number one. That's fine. Golden State's probably number two. The Portland Trailblazers are in, but there's no lock that they're going to end up third. It hasn't been, you know, set in stone yet. So there is still a lot left to play for all these teams, and schedule makers got this one right.
Yeah, and I think it's a treat for the fans. It's probably a little more stressful for the fan of some of these specific teams, but it makes every night kind of appointment viewing. It's not where you can just kind of sit back and fold your hands for the next week and wait for those matchups to come out and how it's going to look in the postseason, because you need to be dialed in and glued to each one of these games. You know, take last night, for example, that Denver over Indy result, Denver barely getting a win over the Pacers, that was huge. I think tomorrow night's matchup in Denver would mean a little less if Denver had dropped that one and was still going to be multiple games behind Minnesota. Now they get the win, they pulled it within one, and all of a sudden Thursday looms large. So, yeah, every single night is something fun, something different. And a lot of these teams, because of how tight everything is and because of the jostling for position, they're already playing playoff basketball. The urgency's there, the intensity's there. Some of these games have gotten pretty chippy, and we've seen some great performances from individual players. So, yeah, it's kind of an extended early portion of the postseason.
How much does Minnesota need to rely on their veterans, whether it's Butler, who's not back yet, or Jeff Teague, Jamal Crawford, Taj Gibson, those guys, to explain the intensity needed, or at this point, and already having, you know, been basically in a playoff positioning battle for the last couple of weeks, do you feel like Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Tyus Jones, those guys understand? Or is there something maybe different that you feel like they could learn from some of the vets in this final week of the season?
Yeah, I think they're learning. I think guys like Kat and Wig and Tyus and even Nemanja Bjelica and anyone who really hasn't been involved in a postseason push yet at this level, they're kind of figuring it out as they go. And sometimes the lessons are hard. Sometimes you learn quickly that if your intensity isn't where it needs to be at the start of a game, by the time you get it there, get it where it needs to be, some way, you know, somewhere mid through the second quarter or whatever, it might be too late in some of these games. And Taj Gibson and Jamal Crawford, the guys who are healthy, Jeff Teague was healthy recently, missed Sunday, they can only do so much teaching and communicating and kind of getting you to feel how it is. I go back to after Kat had a rough game, I think it was Memphis, where Jeff Teague had to kind of pull him aside and say, hey, you're not going to get some of these calls. Like, this is playoff-style physicality now, and if you go to the paint and go to the rim to score, you got to try to score. Don't expect a foul call. And I think they're learning quickly. I think Kat, obviously, he adjusted quite well after that game and put up 56, but it's something where some of these other teams, the Nuggets included, they have a few more veterans who can maybe pass it down, so to speak, to some of their younger players. And Minnesota's at a disadvantage, but it just makes their margin for error even smaller. And really all the experience these guys are getting is only going to be good in the long term when you get guys like Jimmy Butler back and hopefully Jeff Teague back very soon.
I really liked what Coach Tibbs said yesterday in that when Jimmy went down, we told ourselves we want to have a chance. And the Wolves have gone 8-8 in the 16 games since Jimmy went down, and they're in the playoff picture, and they're giving themselves a chance. And this final week is going to be a very important one. But I kind of thought that was interesting that, you know, when you lose a player of Jimmy's caliber, you have to adjust your expectations a little bit. And so, you know, at that point, it sounds like they said, hey, without Jimmy, we've still got enough to get into the postseason. Now, where we get in, I guess, you know, it remains to be seen, but we've got enough to get in. And, you know, hearing that yesterday, I feel like that could give these guys confidence. You know, their head coach is saying, hey, this is a guy that I brought in. You know, he's been a great kind of, you know, ambassador in the locker room, all these things in terms of changing the culture, but we've got enough and we're going to get in. And Tibbs has said that a couple of different times, you know, where he said, you know, I feel like we've got enough and we're going to do it. And so I feel like if that's coming from the head coach down, hopefully that gives those guys in the locker room that same kind of confidence that, hey, we do have enough and we're in a position to do this. And I think the biggest thing for Minnesota right now is controlling their destiny. You know, at the beginning of the season, we hoped it wouldn't come down to this, but you got tiebreakers. You got them against Oklahoma City. You got them against New Orleans. You've got an opportunity to get it against Denver. Split with Utah as secondary tiebreakers. Like we said, we could go crazy trying to figure it out. But at the end of the day, you do have those things, and you do control your destiny, and you're in a position. And this final week, I think, could be really, you know, kind of a defining mark of the season in that does this team, you know, kind of overcome all these obstacles of guys being hurt and everything else and get things rolling and then maybe head into the postseason with some momentum. But I just like that confidence that Tibbs seems to have in this team that they can and will get it done.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the attitude you have to have, right? You have to sort of that resolve where you just say, yeah, we're missing Jimmy, and a lot of these teams might be more healthy at this stage and it might not be a fair fight. But if you go down, you go down swinging. And at the same token, maybe Minnesota figures everything out, starts to play well, and then you get a player like Jimmy back, and all of a sudden that's a huge boost as well. So I think either way, they knew. And like you said, Tibbs basically said, we knew it was going to be a fight. We knew it wasn't going to be easy. And all these guys on this roster, you give them credit because they were up to the challenge. They were up to kind of what this was going to entail. They kept their heads above water during that really tough stretch, got some big wins. The Warriors on the road against the Wizards, and now they've given themselves this opportunity. And sure, there have been some tough losses that make things a little tighter in these final four games, but it's all been stuff that they can grow from. And like you said, the ultimate goal of getting to the postseason is still very much in front of them. They haven't sort of squandered that away or anything like that. It's going to be difficult, but they still have the ability to sort of check that off and then see what else happens once they're there.
And biggest thing for Minnesota is they're playing from ahead. They're already in, unlike Denver and the LA Clippers that are trying to leapfrog teams and get into the playoffs. Now, Denver, you know, obviously with the two matchups could flip things very quickly, but Minnesota's in at this moment, so you've already got, you know, that in terms of playing from ahead. All right, we're going to take a quick timeout. Still to come, we'll go three in the key, the top three storylines this week in the NBA. But coming up next, a conversation with Wolves point guard Jeff Teague, right here on the Timberwolves Radio Network.
Wolves fans, night in and night out, you've showed up and showed out, cheering on the pack at every home game. And now it's our turn to show our appreciation. Join us on April 11th for Fan Appreciation Night, presented by Star Tribune, when we take on Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets in our last game of the regular season. Every fan in attendance will receive an exclusive fan appreciation poster. Visit Timberwolves.com to get your tickets now. Minnesota Timberwolves, all eyes north.
Welcome back to WolvesCast Audio on Demand. I'm John Fokey. Cal Sotercourse returns in just a moment. We'll go three in the key, take a look at the top three storylines this week in the NBA. But right now, we've been talking about it, that playoff push for the Wolves, and one guy knows all about that. Starting point guard Jeff Teague has made the postseason every year he's been in the NBA, and I recently caught up with him to chat about that and other topics.
Jeff, coach talks about your competitiveness and your toughness. Where did that come from?
Probably just competing against my older brother and my best friends in the backyards, playing basketball, playing pickup.
How did that sort of raise your level of competitiveness or make you tougher?
Wanting to win, and 21, I was always the shorter guy on the court, so trying to get the rebound and just competing, just fighting out there.
How does that toughness play out in terms of your ability to penetrate, to get to the rim, to finish inside, and really do it fearlessly?
Like you said, it's a lot of big guys in there. You just got to go in there and try to, you know, create some contact. And like you said, be fearless.
When you're not creating that contact, you develop that floater. Can you tell us where that floater kind of came from?
The floater came from being a short guy. A lot of taller guys playing against Greg Oden and those guys in high school. And just trying to have an ability to make some shots. And the floater was a shot that I was comfortable with.
How challenging was it developing that type of a shot?
Honestly, it wasn't. It was just like a shot that just kind of worked out for me. I never really practiced it. It just kind of just came along.
When you're doing it, do you have to think about getting further into the paint, drawing the man to you? Kind of what goes into making that shot successful?
Honestly, I'm probably not the best person to tell you about a floater. I just kind of play and just takes what the defense gives me. And when I get in the lane, I know that's a shot that I'm comfortable with. I really can't describe to you how or when or why I do it.
It's just sort of a reaction, a muscle
memory?
Yeah,
it's definitely just a reaction.
Going back to the toughness, and you've been in the playoffs every single year of your career. I guess, does toughness play a role in that, whether your toughness, team toughness?
Yeah, mentally tough. Have an opportunity to be in the playoffs. It's going to be ups and downs during the seasons, ups and downs during a playoff series. You have to be mentally tough and physically tough.
What does it mean to you to have that streak, to have been to the postseason each and every year?
It means a lot to me. That means that I've been on really quality teams and I played with some really quality players. Been coached by some great coaches, so I just want to continue that streak.
When you're out there and you're playing with an edge and bringing that competitiveness and that toughness, how do you balance, you know, staying even keel throughout the game while still bringing that type of an edge?
I was taught by a guy when I was younger to keep an even keel, because he was like, when you do one play and you act so excited, act like you've done it before. So I used to be one of those guys that beat my chest and pumped my arms every time I did something. But then when he told me that, it made like sense. Like, man, act like you've done it before. Just take it. When something goes wrong, I had the same approach.
Does that help in being a point guard too, knowing that you've got to be a leader like that?
Yeah. Guys see that you're down. It affects the whole team. But when you're up, they can feel it too. So you just keep it even keel. They never know if you're down or if you're up. And they're just going to know that you're consistent.
What's the biggest challenge of getting a team to the postseason?
Just believing. Some of the guys on the team haven't been there, and they don't know what it takes to get there. And you just got to believe and want it more than the other teams. And right now we're in a dogfight with some teams who really want it, and we got to be one of those teams that's going to show and go out on the floor and try to prove it.
Big thanks to Jeff Teague for the time. The playoff push continues for the Wolves this week with games Thursday at Denver. Then Friday, they're in Los Angeles to face off with the Lakers. Keep right here. We'll go 3 in the Key next on the Timberwolves Radio Network.
Suit up like the Pack in the newly renovated team store located on the Skyway level of Target Center. Shop the newest in Timberwolves apparel, including jerseys, on-court gear, hats, and more. Visit TimberwolvesTeamStore.com or stop by the team store at Target Center today. Minnesota Timberwolves, all eyes north.
Welcome back. WolvesCast Audio on Demand. John Folkey, Cal Soderquist. Time right now to go 3 in the Key. Take a look at the top three storylines this week in the NBA. And we're going to go kind of East-focused right now because we spent a lot of time, obviously, talking about Western Conference playoff picture and all that and how it's going to break down with regard to Minnesota. So over to the Eastern Conference for topic number one. Ty Lue, the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, took a leave of absence to focus on his health. Sounds like he is returning to the Cavs bench. Now, Cleveland in an interesting position because they lost their head coach, and then all of a sudden they lost Kevin Love, they lost Kyle Korver, and things just have not been easy for Cleveland at all this season, yet they're still sitting 48-30 in the Eastern Conference and hanging on to that three spot by a thread. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But getting their head coach back, is that more important than maybe getting Kyle Korver and Kevin Love back at full strength?
I think so. I think it lets you sort of realign and get everything kind of in a row before the postseason gets here. And we've said it about the Cavs for much of the season that they're kind of concerned with themselves and just making sure they can get everything set to go. Obviously, you make a lot of different deals and bring in a lot of new faces right at the trade deadline, so your focus was always going to be on getting everyone on the same page. I think it's the same deal now that you get Coach Lue back on the sideline and back in the huddles and back in practices and shoot-arounds. You want to make sure he's on the same page with everyone who maybe has started to play well now that they've won 9 of 10. And I think that's kind of the most important thing, even though, like you alluded to, Philly is breathing down their necks, very much so for that 3 seed. But they probably will, or at least I think should, put the importance and prioritize having everyone on the same page, coach and players, all that.
I honestly think getting Korver and Love back is more important than getting their head coach back, just because it's not to take anything away from what coaches do, but players win these games, and certainly the coach is going to put out the strategy and the coaching staff, but they've got a great coaching staff, and Larry Drew, who stepped in, he's been a head coach in this league before. But you saw when Kevin Love was healthy and playing at a high level for that team right before he went down with this most recent injury, the concussion, and he's in the protocol program right now, he impacts that team and makes them very, very dangerous and very, very difficult to guard and kind of takes some of the load off LeBron. And I feel like they're using Love this year maybe better than they've ever used him in his time in Cleveland. So getting him back, getting Korver back, to me, that's more important because you've already got the scheme set in place. Yeah. You're going to come up with scouting reports and counters to certain things, but getting those guys healthy, that pressure that they can put on the defense, to me, that's more important than getting Ty Lue back. But I think the good news is that Ty feels healthy enough that he does want to return right to the sideline. So hopefully he was able to figure out those health issues, and that will bode well for him personally and for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's move to topic number two, the battle for third place in the East. We kind of teased it there. Cavs have won 9 out of 10 games. They are a half game up on the Philadelphia 76ers, who don't look now, have won 11 straight games, even without Joel Embiid. Sixers are rolling. So battle for third in the Eastern Conference. Who's got the edge in your mind?
I think Philly. I think Philly can do it. And like you mentioned, Joel is not playing right now, but he's kind of the guy who threw down this gauntlet originally a couple weeks ago, right before the Wolves were set to play Philly in Philly a couple weekends. And he said they wanted 50 wins. He said that was his new goal once they had officially clinched a playoff spot. And J.J. Redick and some teammates kind of laughed it off, but it's within sights, definitely. Now they're at 47, and like I kind of said about Cleveland, they might be more focused internally, not so much where they end up in the standings. Who knows, in terms of resting some guys or just getting everyone on the same page. Philly is that young team with kind of something to prove, and I think they all would think 50 wins is pretty cool, especially when you consider where that franchise has been. Now a lot of those guys haven't been there since day one, but Embiid, even a guy who had to sit on the shelf basically for as long as he did, and it would be pretty cool for them, a pretty cool accomplishment.
Detroit at Detroit, home to Cleveland, home to Dallas, at Atlanta, home to Milwaukee. That's what the Philadelphia 76ers have left. I think they get to 50 wins,
yeah.
And I think they have an opportunity to overtake the Cavs. Here's what the Cavs' final week of the season looks like. They're home to Washington, at Philly, and then back-to-back home games, a home-and-home series with the New York Knicks. So I don't see either of these teams losing. I think that matchup between Cleveland and Philadelphia, which is coming up on Friday, that could determine the fate of that number three seed. If Philadelphia is able to get that victory, then I think they put them in the driver's seat in order to track down that three seed. And I feel like for Philadelphia, as you mentioned, with that young team, that's more important to them. Kind of like we talked about with Houston, Houston versus Golden State for the top spot in the Western Conference. Houston wants that. They haven't had it. Golden State's had it. Golden State has a confidence that they can win a series on the road, that, they can win a variety of different ways. I feel like Cleveland feels that same way. Whereas for Philadelphia, they want to get as high as they can, and they will gas the end of the regular season in order to get there. Now, that brings us to topic number three, the most dangerous team in the league right now. Talked about Philadelphia, talked about Cleveland. Those teams are rolling. East or West, who's your most dangerous team in the league right now?
I like Houston. I think that's maybe an easy answer, but I think with sort of their self-confidence, I was talking about this earlier in one of my affiliate calls, and we agreed that their depth and kind of how they all grasp their roles within that Mike D'Antoni system, whether it's Clint Capella just rim running and setting great screens for guys like James Harden and Chris Paul. Some of the shooters that they can just stretch out, Ryan Anderson, and then the defenders, guys like PJ Tucker and Luke Richard and Bamute. Everyone knows what they bring to that system, and they've experienced this entire season what that system is like when it's kind of firing on all cylinders. I think a first-round series with them, what you're hoping is that they're ice cold from deep, because then that could change the complexion of a series. But the fact that it's a 7-game series instead of a 5 or a 3, I think really is in Houston's favor, because they've got that figured out. It's a lot of fun to watch them put up points, and I think right now they're the team that I would fear the most in terms of a playoff matchup.
I would fear the Utah Jazz, and it's not because we just saw them, and they looked frighteningly good. It's because of what they can do defensively, and you can have a great offense, but shots sometimes don't go in.
Yep.
And over the course of a 7-game series, yeah, you can try to game plan around their defense, but their defense is so good and how they funnel everything to Gobert. And they're so on point in their rotations. I mean, just watching them play defense is it's a beautiful thing. Their guards are so relentless and aggressive out there, and they've got the right guards. Rubio defensively fits right into it. Dante Exum, now that he's healthy. Donovan Mitchell, those guys. So the fact that they can win games ugly with their defense, and while their offense isn't a prolific offense, they've got really good pieces. And right now, all those pieces are playing with a lot of confidence. They can spread you out with three-point shooting from Joe Ingles. They can go inside to Gobert. They can run with Rubio. Mitchell can break you down, and Mitchell can score from just about anywhere. I mean, I think they are a very dangerous team right now. They're playing with confidence offensively, and they've already got confidence in their defense. And the fact that, you know, they've just been rolling for 30 straight games now, 25-5 in their last 30 games, they've got a ton of momentum, and they're playing with a ton of confidence. But it's interesting because, you know, Philadelphia, I think, is dangerous, but once they get to the playoffs, you know, in a seven-game series, how will those guys that have never experienced that, for the most part, handle that? Cleveland, they've won 9 out of 10. They've been there. You could say they're dangerous. The Rockets, they've won 9 out of 10. They've been there. All the things that you mentioned, I would consider them very dangerous too. But for me, it's that defensive component that the Jazz have that makes them just a little bit more dangerous than those other teams. And the experience. I mean, I know Rubio hasn't been there. I know Mitchell hasn't been there, but Quinn Snyder's been through playoff series. You know, he's coached in big games as an assistant. And, you know, the rest of these guys, you know, Gobert's been there. Ingles has been there. I mean, they've tasted the playoffs. Maybe not, you know, a conference finals or anything like that. But because they can rely on their defense, I feel like they won't get overwhelmed if shots don't fall.
Well, and like what I said about Houston, and you had said that everyone's on the same page with that Utah defense. And Quinn Snyder and that staff and those players, they have a plan that fits the skill set of a Rudy Gobert and then the players surrounding him, and everyone has bought in. And that's what's led to their success. So it's kind of the same. It's two different sides of the same coin in terms of everyone being on the same page and being able to have a lot of success because of it.
All right, it is going to be a fun, fun second season when we finally get to it, but still a lot of work left to be done here in the regular season. For Cal Soderquist, I'm John Fokey saying so long. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, check us out on Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, Timberwolves.com, and, of course, your on-demand device as well. Just say, hey, Alexa, play podcast WolvesCast, and it'll get you the latest episode of WolvesCast Audio On Demand. We'll talk to you again next week right here on the Timberwolves Radio Network.